The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. Today, we are re-sharing an older episode. This is actually the first episode that Sam and I ever recorded. So I think the audio is not perfect, but it's about boundaries and how they've become a catch-all term, and also really how people have started weaponizing their boundary. And I think that it's a really important topic. You probably didn't hear it because, again, this was the first episode that came out in October 2024, but I think you'll really like it. And essentially, we kind of talk about, obviously, boundaries are extremely important, but what a boundary is, what it isn't, why people weaponize them, what it looks like, and the nuance of how to implement healthy boundaries in your own life. So hope you love it. As always, the best thing you can do to support the show is share your thoughts, rate, review, share it with someone in your life. Truly, that is how we're able to keep the lights on and continuing to produce the show. So thank you. As always, we are so grateful for you.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And this is Nuance Needed.
Welcome, welcome. We're happy you're here.
We are so happy to be here. Sam, what are we talking about this week?
We are talking about that super straightforward and not controversial topic of boundaries.
It is funny that it is controversial. I don't exactly know why that is, but it is controversial because people are misconstruing it. I think that's part of it.
Well, I think it's one of those things that I think a lot of people assume they understand when they very much don't.
Yes.
And it's like really, it's kind of to jump right in.
Yeah.
It's really quite easy to like take the upper hand in a situation when you throw out boundaries. You can very quickly own an interaction if you're like, my boundaries are being violated right now.
Yes. Yes. That's a very good point. And I mean, I think we've been talking about this, Sam and I, with clients for a really long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this will probably be a theme on the podcast and something we break down. We'll probably do a series where we break down all different terms that are being misconstrued inappropriately.
Yes.
On the internet, therapy speak, and the issues that come from that. Mm-hmm. But we're recording this in August, and there was a Cut article that came out that was a pretty incredible example of boundaries that are
not boundaries
that are misconstrued. Yeah.
That's not a boundary.
Yes. Yes. So just to catch everyone up, it's a short little, she wrote into the Cut asking, and to give you just kind of the Cliff Notes version, what she says is, no one in my husband's family washes their hands before meals. Instead, they touch their faces, pet their family dog, play with the reptiles, and then sit down at the table, proceeding to touch every bagel and piece of crudité because pursuing visually is not enough. I've spotted Shrek-sized fuzzy fingerprints on more than a dozen slices of cheese. And she goes on to talk about her dogs. And essentially at the end, she says that she's on the verge of divorce. And, you know, her husband says that it's not their fault. These are unintentional slights. And she essentially says, it's behavior that violates my boundaries, makes me feel deeply uncomfortable, and threatens my livelihood. I'm learning it's hard to be a facer among avoiders. Initial thoughts.
My issue was when I first glanced through it, there were so many conflicting things that she was bringing up. Because I think right off the bat, as a self-described neat freak, that's gross. That would bug me.
It's very, like, it's very funny because I was like, this is normal.
I
maybe the reptiles, because I don't have reptiles. Yeah. But I touch my dogs and I eat all the time.
Well, I think that's fine. I think in relation to something that is going to be picked up from multiple people. I think for me, there was a part of me that was like, I could see that being, if your family culture is very hygiene forward and focus, I could see that situation being difficult. However, the key issue here is the boundary is not telling them they now have to shift their whole dynamic in order to cater to you and what you want. A boundary would be saying to your husband, if it is not like I'm dishing myself up from something that doesn't involve people's hands, it's all spatulas, I won't be eating.
Yeah.
That is a boundary. A boundary is not saying, okay, well, for me to come over, there will be immediate hand washing in all times and all things and in all places, and nobody can touch this when I'm there because that bugs me. That's trying to control a room in order to mitigate your discomfort.
Yes.
The boundary in this situation is, I'm going to choose to not eat.
Or bring your own food.
That's what I thought.
I was like, bring your own food.
Yeah. Like, if it's going to bug you that bad, the element of boundaries is you figuring out how you operate while other people are operating around you. That is what a boundary is.
Yeah, I mean, I think to physicalize it as in a metaphor, one of the ways that I really like to describe it is a boundary is right the fence around your property.
Yes.
And while, right, like that could look, right, a fence, you could walk by someone's fence and be like, they're punishing me because I want to walk on their lawn and they won't let me.
Right.
Right. So that is how a boundary gets misconstrued in the opposite way. But, right, like a boundary is not telling someone else how they take care of their lawn. It's how you focus on your own lawn, your own house, and protecting that. It is not about controlling or changing someone else's behavior.
Right. Not at all. Not even in the slightest. And now we can have a concern about our boundaries actually being violated if, like, going back to this woman's example, if while she is at the house, people start pushing her and engaging in, you know, bullying and, well, why won't you? Like, you should just eat. It's fine. It's not a big deal. That is when we can start talking about boundary violations. Because when you've just communicated like, oh, I'm not hungry, or, oh, I brought my own food, or no, I'm not going to eat, right? If someone then pushes back on getting into your yard, that's when you can say, no, ma'am, please leave.
Right.
But to simply walk in and then say your boundary is that everybody now needs to operate the way you operate. That's called control.
Yeah.
And we don't like that.
Yeah. And I think it's confusing because of what we had kind of talked about, that sometimes the same boundary, like the intention, right? Like really matters in a boundary. Right. And that's what's hard because we don't always know someone's intention. We know this person's intention based on what she wrote in and said, but in real life, you don't always know whether someone is trying to control you or trying to protect themselves. I think you can figure it out by looking at context clues, mm-hmm. by asking a question, mm-hmm. by trying to compromise in some way and seeing how they respond.
Right.
But a boundary isn't really a boundary when it starts with, you know, my boundary is you can't.
Yeah. No.
Versus my boundary is I can't.
Mm-hmm. To bring this back to like the clinical perspective,
mm-hmm.
like being in school,
mm-hmm.
it felt like that was this big topic that everybody spoke about, but there was never really like clear, thorough explanation. It was kind of like, no, boundaries, boundaries, boundaries,
yeah,
boundaries, boundaries. So I think for you,
mm-hmm.
when did you start to recognize what boundaries actually meant? I think like professionally, like for you, when did it start to click of like, oh yeah.
I feel like I didn't really think about it until I started working in a rehab and mm-hmm. we talked a lot about coping skills and rehab, like, right. and boundaries right. of, right. Like, but it was very obvious what a lot of those boundaries were, because they were like, you have to protect yourself from not using.
Yes.
You have to not go to the, you know, you have to not hang out with friends who mm-hmm. still use drugs. Mm-hmm. You have to drive a different way home because mm-hmm. you can't go by that ATM that you used to get cash out of. You have mm-hmm. to leave the party early where people are drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there has been a very recent phenomenon with TikTok specifically mm-hmm. that has caused this misconstrual of boundaries. I never had conversations with people before, really.
Mm-mm.
It was, you know, parents saying, you have to be sober to live in my house. Those was very mm-hmm. concrete seeming, clear boundaries.
Very, very black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yeah, as I think people have talked about them more, there has been a lot more opportunity to misconstrue mm-hmm. what a boundary is, essentially.
Yeah. For me, it's interesting that you say this, kind of like, when did boundaries like really start to enter like the public consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
For me, the first time it was really like hammered home was when I started working at a residential treatment center
mm-hmm.
and boundaries were communicated amongst staff,
mm.
not necessarily as a treatment modality, mm. but as how we had boundaries with the students at the facility.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point too.
That was and I was still an undergrad at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first foray into kind of this very visceral feeling of boundaries and understanding that. And I remember it's actually been something that's come pretty easy to me
mm-hmm.
in the professional setting. Because like, I remember so many people would be like, oh my gosh, like I'm having dreams about the kids are like, and I'm like, I'm not. I don't want to see these people in my dreams. Yeah. Like, they torment me for 8 hours on my shift. Like, I don't want to see them in my dreams. Or like, I remember I would say no very quickly. Mm. Like mm-hmm. when the kids would ask to do something or they had an issue, my first response would be like, not right now. And then I would go check on something and then be like, hey, actually you can. But I kind of started with like a safety first mentality.
Yeah.
And so many other staff really struggled with that. They had a really, really hard time telling the kids no, and they felt really uncomfortable. And I also think in that setting, a lot of staff were still fairly young. Like I was in my early 20s, and these are kids in their teens. So
mm-hmm.
you're not very far removed from like peer status.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people had a really like hard time with that. And this idea that the kids wouldn't like them, or they were going to be the mean one. And I just didn't care. So I don't know what that says about me. But that was kind of like my first foray into really understanding boundaries.
Yeah.
In that
No,
sense.
That's a good point. That reminds me just of, like I think professional boundaries mm-hmm. are something that have sort of
mm-hmm.
always existed.
Yeah.
Before social media or anything like that, of you dress appropriately for work.
Yeah.
I think we can take it too far back in like, you know, 2000 and the 90s and stuff mm-hmm. like that, right? If you don't cry at work, you don't do any of these things
right.
at work. And I think I'm just having this thought too of maybe also some of the problem with how boundaries have been misconstrued is because they were so rigid. They were so black and white. This is how you show up at work. This is how you show up, you know, with family. This is how you show up with your parents, right? Of like, you respect your parents, you respect your elders. And as we've sort of casualized over the years and invited authenticity into our personal lives, our professional lives, social media blending sort of, you know, personal and professional lives and everything in between. Is that maybe where some of how we've lost the plot and we get confused? Because what is the line between being unprofessional at work and crying all the time and not being able to do your work, for example, and being so rigid with your professional boundaries that you aren't showing up as yourself?
Even like hearing you kind of lay that out, I have like three different thought threads at the same time, which is like, well, to take it back, like there were these ideas that people didn't realize were boundaries. They were, I think the word probably more people used was expectations.
Yeah.
Like you have these expectations of how you should behave.
Social norms.
Yeah, social norms, cultural norms, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Maybe I am sort of mixing norms and expectations with
boundaries.
Well,
but I think also, I don't think you're totally wrong, because I think to kind of keep this thread going, maybe part of the issue that you and I are both recognizing, and we're kind of like nailing it down finally in this conversation, is that a lot of these things that are norms and expectations have now been labeled as boundaries when they never really were. It was more social cultural beliefs and the way people liked to behave within their communities.
Yeah. Even like ethical behavior as a therapist, for example, is how you're expected to behave, to not lose your license.
Right. Right. But then the problem is there's really bad therapists that don't believe in that.
Correct. Correct.
So it's complicated. But then I think part of the issue that I'm seeing with the boundaries discussion, and I think part of it is attached to kind of this example that we started the episode with, is boundaries have become this thing that have to have tension and confrontation attached to it. Like whenever I have conversations with clients, well, not whenever, but a lot of times when I have conversations with clients about boundaries, there is this visceral fear of, oh, well, this is going to involve a really difficult, aggressive feeling conversation for me to get this point across.
Yeah.
When it's okay to just say like, well, there's ways I do things and I will just live that way because that feels authentic to me, while also keeping in mind other people's cultural and social norms. Right. And neither one is wrong. The part in the middle that protects both sides is living authentically and asking people to respect that you are living authentically to what you want to do.
Yeah. And allowing difference.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. And that someone living differently is not an attack on your boundary.
Which is, exactly. Yes. To close the loop of what we were talking about, right? Like someone, you may think it's gross. You may not want to like eat from a community platter.
Table or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Of people who don't wash their hands. Right. But just because you are uncomfortable with that behavior does not mean it is harming you. And I think the word harm is really where things get muddied.
Yes. This idea that if I even sense that there is some sort of a quote unquote boundary violation, I am now in an unsafe situation.
Yeah. Which to your point, Sam, it's like that is just a difference of opinion or belief.
Right. And I guess what's hard is it's like it is an individual choice to decide if something is causing you harm.
Yeah. No, it is. It's very nuanced.
It's very, really hard. Nuanced. Yet I think when I've had people, you know, clients come to me and talking about this, and I think even in my personal life, when our friends ask us about stuff or, you know, we're venting about things, whatever, I do sometimes push back on the harm narrative a little bit. I'll challenge it. If it ends up being, you know, their truth, let's go with it. Great.
Right.
But I always want to get curious about that idea of incorporating the other person's perspective.
Yeah.
Right? Like, was this truly meant as something to attack you, harm you, cause you discomfort, push your buttons, or are you somebody that's currently working on using your voice, mm-hmm. having more of a voice, communicating better? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, you were triggered feeling like maybe you were being taken advantage of or being pushed around. And that's what caused you to snap. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that in that moment there was actual harm.
Yeah.
It was this mild trigger related to something that you're working on or something that you're working towards. But those are so nuanced.
Yeah.
And such like deeply personal conversations that I think a lot of people don't want to have to go there. It's mm-hmm. easier to just point and say, this person violated my boundary. They caused me harm. End of story.
I think it's interesting too, because in recent years, I think we've had this discussion of impact versus intention. And mm-hmm. I think it does matter. I think we used to just say, right, only people's intentions mattered. And now right. we're recognizing that the impact also matters.
Right.
But I think in general, and this is a very big theme of what we talk about, Sam, is sometimes we overcorrect.
Yes.
And yes. while yes, it does matter a lot how someone is impacted, mm-hmm. their intentions still do matter, especially yes. if you know them well. Like in yes. these, it's one thing if we're talking about broad societal constructs, laws, discriminate, right? Like
for sure.
broad systems.
Right.
But in interpersonal relationships, especially the closer you are to someone, mm-hmm. their intentions do matter.
Yes.
Caveat, obviously, abuse.
For sure.
Right? Like,
yes.
like all of that, we're not talking about that. No. We're talking about like you and me, Sam, mm-hmm. I say something that like bothers you, negatively impacts mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. potentially causes you harm. Mm-hmm. If I didn't mean to, it does matter because yes. it will be much easier to have a conversation yes. with me. And to repair so that doesn't mm-hmm. happen again. Mm-hmm. Where if it was my intention to hurt you,
right.
that totally changes the dynamic.
1,000%. And I love that you used the word repair, because that was the word that was coming in my mind of that would be when I would challenge if I had a client come to me and say, they hurt my feelings, right? Okay, great.
Yeah.
How do you want to proceed? Mm-hmm. Right? Is this a friendship that you care about investing mm-hmm. in maybe some spicier, uncomfy conversations in order to work through it? Right? Mm-hmm. Like that is the important piece. And people are deserving of the chance to show accountability.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we can sell people so short that they're not capable of doing that.
Because we're scared sometimes to have the hard conversation. Yes. So we assume they're incapable
yes.
of it.
Yes. And that, and we avoid it.
Yeah.
And I tell my clients all the time, like you have to be willing to practice letting multiple things be true. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to sit in a space that it is true that my friend did something that hurt my feelings or offended me. And it is also true that I'm willing to bet their intent was not to do that. Mm-hmm. And I can hold space for both. And also, if we want the opportunity to repair with people when yes. we've done wrong, we have to be willing to extend that same opportunity to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the other part is if we get – right, if we have this expectation that everyone never makes mistakes, right. we almost can become really rigid and perfectionistic mm-hmm. because people are people. Like right. we make mistakes. We say mm-hmm. things we don't mean to, especially mm-hmm. the closer you are with someone, the more interactions you have,
right.
the more likely you are to say the wrong thing, mm-hmm. to come up short, to make a mistake, mm-hmm. to have a difference of opinion. But it is in the repair, it is in those conversations that we actually build closeness mm-hmm. and trust, and mm-hmm. we learn that it is safe to come to someone with this, and then it is possible to grow. Right. Where I worry sometimes with social media and with how these conversations have shifted, we've become so perfectionistic, and I see this sometimes online or with clients where it's like, she did this, she knows how much this mm-hmm. would hurt me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people make mistakes and yeah. I worry we're not giving people grace and mm-hmm. it is causing more division and more polarization and even just more friendship breakups because
yes.
we have unrealistic expectations of people.
Mm-hmm. And this belief that I am entitled to something that somebody else is not. So, you know, we are expecting people to have all of this grace and all of this empathy and all of this understanding for where we're at in life and what we're going through. But then the second we are expected to extend that to someone else, it's like, well, I've never done anything wrong. I would never do something like that. I would. And even if that's true, it's not.
Well, it's like the classic, car example, yes. Right? Of like, I forget the name of the official bias, but right when you're driving your car and you cut someone off or yes. make a mistake when you're driving, right? Like right. you expect the person to understand and have the full context.
Right.
That this isn't just your personality. Mm-hmm. Where when we see someone do the same thing, we're like, mm-hmm. that person is a jerk.
Yeah.
Because we know one thing about them and we assume that that is mm-hmm. who they are.
Yeah.
And I think this is also the problem with more interactions online than yes. in real life, because yes. it is just much easier to make snap judgments, to take mm-hmm. one small comment someone made online mm-hmm. and extrapolate that into their whole personality mm-hmm. compared to when you have a real authentic conversation with someone face to face. Most of us would never say that.
No.
To someone. Most people, like, there's a reason when you're driving, like, most people wouldn't say the stuff to someone's face mm-hmm. when they were, that they say to someone when they're driving anonymously.
Yeah, exactly. When there's no, because in these online conversations too, there's no risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially a lot of people are straight up, like, yeah. fully anonymous. No one yes. knows you.
No one knows you. You don't even have a profile picture. And you're yeah. like, username 10892358. Like, so you get to say whatever you want with no consequence. Mm-hmm. But also, if we're, you know, taking it back to boundaries, right? Yeah. So there's so much black and white thinking around our boundaries. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, kind of if we're going to talk about like this internet culture of this very like binary back and forth aggression mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. going on, there's what's missing is the idea that within conversations about boundaries with people who care about us and we care about them, there is so much nuance to the conversation. Yeah. It doesn't have to be that you immediately text your friend and say, I will not be doing this. Like, that's just not how authentic human conversation happens.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, kind of going back to what I said earlier about there's clients who are like, oh my God, like, I don't want to have this super hard conversation. Like, well, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Because in the moment, you can very easily be like, oh, I don't think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And if someone yeah. says, oh, why not? One, that's a valid question.
Yeah.
If the whole group is doing something and you are not. Mm-hmm. That is a valid question to ask, like, oh, why? What's wrong? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times people will stop there and be like, you can't question me.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, people who care about you are allowed to explore what is going on with you.
Yeah.
You then get to decide how much information you want to give. If I go to Disneyland, I don't know how many of you have been to Disneyland. I cannot stand Space Mountain. That is one of my most controversial opinions next to hating watermelon. I truly hate watermelon. I think it's disgusting. Genuinely. I could do an entire episode on proving you wrong of why it's disgusting. Genuinely.
Okay. Maybe we'll do a bonus episode on Sam. If you want to hear about why Sam, watermelon is disgusting, let us know.
Watermelon. And send me all the hate email you want. I've already fielded it from all my family and friends. My skin is like 6 inches thick with this, so don't worry. But anyway, I don't like Space Mountain.
Okay.
It makes me really dizzy. I get like extra sick on it. I end up with a headache for 2 hours and I'm miserable. And so years ago, I went with some friends and I told them, I said, if I go on this ride, I am going to be a cranky little girl. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be fun. I'm mm-hmm. going to be mad at all of you and I'm going to make it your problem. And they were like, no, like, it's going to be fine. It's fine. Like, blah, blah, blah. And kind of, you know, they all felt bad that I would be sitting outside mm-hmm. for 2 hours while they were in line, go through the ride, come back, the whole thing. What they don't know is I love being on my own and I would have happily strolled the park, right? But anyway, they pushed and pushed and pushed. And so I said, okay, fine. And I went. And what happened? She was a cranky girl. And I made it everybody's problem. And they all realized what happened. when they pushed my buttons mm-hmm. and made me do something I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And so we were all able to move on. Mm-hmm. And nobody, if we do go, pushes me to go on Space Mountain.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be this big thing. I didn't throw a temper tantrum about they're not listening to me and they don't care about me and blah, 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 blah. Right. Like it just was. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. You want me to go on this? I'm going to tell you exactly what it's going to be when we're all done.
If you're listening to this episode and thinking, oh, I could really use some extra support with boundaries, I've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists located in 43 states across the country. If you're local to the Philadelphia area, we also have 3 in-person offices. Therapy for Women Center is where Sam works. It's obviously where I work. So if you're interested in seeing her or me, you can reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com. Or if we can't work with you, we have therapists across the country, like I said. We'd love for you to check it out and learn more. Well, I also think that's a good point, Sam, too, of like, I think there is a dynamic that happens sometimes among humans where yes. it's like, we want to do what we want to do and we want people to do what we want to do. And it's right. not always this horrible thing. Sometimes no. we think that it's fun to do something together or whatever. Right. And we don't realize we're being too forceful, being too pushy, mm-hmm. stepping on someone's toes, pushing mm-hmm. someone's boundaries. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it didn't cause you harm.
Yeah. Like I rebounded. I was 23. Yeah. Like you're, yeah. you know, you might as well be a sponge at that age. So like everything was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it doesn't, not everything has to be this like direct attack and assault on yeah. what you want to do or your belief system mm-hmm. or, you know, the boundaries that you do have or the boundaries that you want to have. Like, people around you are allowed to misunderstand, not agree, struggle to make sense of it because they just don't have that problem. What matters is, do they do their best to be respectful of what you're wanting and what you're needing?
Yeah.
Just because they don't agree doesn't mean there can't be respect.
Yeah, I think that's a really good distinction.
Or if they're confused by it or they're kind of like, oh, I wouldn't care about that, right?
Yeah, right.
That's fine. Are they still respectful? Do they try hard to be accommodating to what it is that you're saying you're going to be doing or you're going to be needing or whatever?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. And it sort of leads me to one of my biggest pet peeves that I see on the internet, mm-hmm. which is no is a complete sentence. Which like right it is I'm not and for some people right this is what's so frustrating is for some people that is what they need to hear but what I mean I remember when I was first talking about this I don't know a couple years ago and I talked about compassionate boundaries mm-hmm. and how one of my favorite ways to teach people how to set boundaries is by doing kind of a soft start by saying something like I get that you don't have bad intentions or like if you're talking to your parents, right? I understand you're doing this out of love. You love me so much.
Right.
Or if it's a change that you're making, saying something like, I know this is different than what mm-hmm. I've said before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got a lot of pushback that was like, you don't need to explain yourself, right? Like never explain. No is a complete sentence. You're wasting your time by saying all these things. And it's like, again, obviously, if there's harm or something like that, that's a different situation. But if you want to preserve these relationships, one of the best things you can do is actually explain and give some context, into what's going on so that they have an understanding and they don't – a lot of times if we set a boundary that involves someone, right? Like mm-hmm. a lot of times – that person feels like, did I do something wrong? They may feel defensive and they mm-hmm. may start to, you know, defend themselves in some way or explain why they did it. Where if you say, I know you love me, I know you didn't mean it, and, mm-hmm. right, like, I can't have you push me to go on Space Mountain or whatever,
right.
then it doesn't have to become this whole thing about someone being like, well, I didn't mean it and blah, 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 and it's not my fault. And it also doesn't come across as just, right, like if you say that, it doesn't come across to those people either as you're mad at them, you hate them, you don't mm-hmm. want a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. It focuses on just the boundary. And I really wish people would put in, especially with people close to them, would put in more of that effort, would give people more context. I mean, obviously you and I are super biased in how much we love context and nuance, which is the whole premise of the show.
Designed an entire podcast on it.
But maybe context saves the world. I don't know.
Well, also, like, just think for 2 seconds of how it feels if you were to be like, hey, what do you think about this? No! Like, okay.
Yeah, it's very jarring.
Fine. Jesus.
Wait, I never have to explain myself to you. Yeah. Like, it's like, okay. That's right. That's not really indicating that you care about this relationship and you want to – I just am such a big believer, even with boundaries, like there are compromises that we can make. We obviously all have our non-negotiable boundaries. Yes. I talk about this a lot with people drinking and how it is complicated when you live with someone. So what do you say if you live with a partner and you're like, my non-negotiable boundary is my house will be like this, right? Like I think this comes up a lot because – right, Sam, if you and I live together, you're right. You like to keep your house clean. If we lived together, we would have to find a way to compromise. And it would be, it's very hard, I think, when one person is like, my boundary is that everything is perfectly clean. And someone else then is like, well, my boundary is that I don't waste time doing things
that I don't want to do.
That I don't want to do.
And I hate dishes.
I don't, how do we, the only solution is not live together or find a way to compromise. What do you do when you have those situations come up with clients?
I always remind people that it is – you have to be willing to own when you're hurting your own feelings. Like, you have to have the introspection to be like, am I being the immovable stick in the mud?
Am I making this harder for myself? Yeah,
that I'm contributing to the tension.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for example, like if you are living with someone, and this is, I think this works for partners or friendships or just like casual roommates.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk about like the living situation, right? If you do have very different expectations for how the home is clean, one, you need to be willing to stand in a space of what am I accepting of and what am I not? To have like the context and the nuance in there of, you know what, maybe I can live with that, or I'm okay owning that as long as they're willing to own this, right? Like if they say, well, mine is, you know, if we're going to talk about dishes, I have to do the dishes as soon as they are happening. I cannot sit down until all the dishes from meal prep are done. Then I can relax, right? But then the other person's like, well, I'm like by the end of the night, like before I go to bed, right?
Yeah.
Is that a deal breaker for you? Or are you willing to say, I'm just going to own doing dishes? Right? And then to not get bitter because you said, well, I need to have the dishes clean. And this other person said, well, that's not important to me. So no, I will either do it by the end of the night or you're going to be doing them. And to sit in acceptance of that, that this other person then told you what their line is. And you have now decided to own, I'm going to do the dishes as soon as they're done and I will own dishes in this house. But then 2 months later, you can't all of a sudden be bitter that they're not helping with dishes. Right? And so I think I always introduce this idea of you have to be willing to acknowledge that sometimes standing in what your boundaries are is going to feel like it involves work from you. And to recognize
more work for that person to bring food.
Right
to her in-law's house.
That will require more effort. And to recognize that that is a choice that you are making to honor what it is that you want to do. And to be like, okay, I'm hurting my own feelings with this. It's kind of annoying, kind of frustrating, but that was my decision. And so I try to introduce that way of thinking about it, which is you just have to be real sometimes that like, I know I'm doing this to myself. I know I'm putting myself with like a little extra work. It's a little more frustrating. but I'm owning that because the long-term gain of doing it this way is better to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree. I think that it's important to understand what our preferences, you know, I think some of these fall into preferences, I think too. And maybe that's part of it is, is it really a boundary that you can't do the dishes?
Or is it just what you want to do? Or do
you just, don't want to do them? Mm. And I think that kind of comes into what we've been talking about, which is sort of this weaponization.
Yes.
Of the word boundaries, where saying this is my boundary has become this trump card that you can use in any situation at any time.
To make it go your way.
To make it go your way. And there is no acknowledgement even of when you entered into this relationship with someone, when you took this job, when you decided to go on this trip, you agreed to certain things. And now it's uncomfortable, or you've changed your mind, or you have preferences that have come up, and you're saying it's like in violation of your boundaries, when really – like I always come back to like, yes, you're allowed to have boundaries, but so are other people.
Yeah.
Like your boundaries don't get to trump
someone
else's boundaries.
Yes.
So you can say this doesn't work for me, but someone else gets to say it doesn't work for them, like you were talking about. And then we have to decide, well, what are we going to do?
And the compromise is figuring out how both people continue to feel respected and valued.
Yeah.
While maybe being willing to be lenient on certain things. If the other person is willing to be lenient in the other direction.
Yeah.
And I think the black and white thinking comes in with someone saying like, well, if I have to be lenient, they're not being respectful. And lenient is being willing to be flexible to life.
Yeah.
Because everything has context and complexity and uniqueness to the situation. And I think that's what makes people feel so daunted is no is a complete sentence is a very easy, straightforward way to operate in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it lets you kind of sit on this like moral high ground a little bit of like, no. It's like, okay, like we get it. And then those are the same people that get all mad when they feel like they don't have close friendships.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or,
and it is causing this.
Yes, I truly think it is causing this.
It
absolutely
is. Yeah.
It's problematic. This inability to be flexible with the way you engage with other people and engage with the world and to like remove the arrogance that your boundaries are the only ones that could ever be right.
Yeah. Or because, matter even. Because I think they're all, they all right. They're all right for us.
For us individually.
But like they won't, they can't trump other people's.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I'm thinking too about just how I think the problem also lies in on social media, we're really talking about rigid boundaries.
Yes.
Right. And if we talk about, there's kind of generally accepted in psychology, three types of boundaries. There's rigid, porous, right? And then flexible and healthy ones are kind of what we're going for. And I kind of, as you know, I love my metaphors. I kind of think of it, right, as like a rigid boundary is like a door. It's impermeable. It is not flexible. Where a flexible boundary is kind of like a screen door, right? It allows some things in. It allows some things out. It still has a shape to it.
You can open it and close it as you
can open it. It's flexible and it can be – it. And that's what we've been talking about.
Yes.
And then there's porous, which is kind of like a door with huge holes in it.
Right.
Where you can't really control it. It's unpredictable. A lot of times people with porous boundaries say yes when they want to say no and then they kind of freak out later. Or they have no boundaries and they never say no.
Right. But then are angry all the time.
Right. And what we're talking about is ideally in healthy relationships, you have flexible boundaries.
Yes.
And if we only bring rigid boundaries to these relationships, it is going to be hard to have closeness, to have trust, to have compatibility because of all the things we've been saying.
be a screen door. The end. I love that, and I'll probably steal that from you.
Go for it.
Because I think something else kind of in line with this idea of like this screen door and this flexibility mm-hmm. is I remind people like it gets to change whenever you want.
Yes.
Like you could have a boundary. Like, for example, taking it all the way back to the beginning with Miss I Hate Charcuterie Boards. Like, yeah. Okay, maybe there's a group of friends that you're fine with eating that way because yeah. they also wash their hands the second they do yeah. something, or they use tongs to pick out the cheese. And like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it
they
is
keep their
okay.
house cleaner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It is okay for you to engage in those types of meals mm-hmm. because the people around you are behaving the same way you do.
Yeah.
But then it's okay to then go to your in-laws' house and be like, eh, I'm going to bring my own charcuterie board. You know, mm-hmm. you are allowed to change and adapt. Which I think if people are used to the safety that rigidity brings, kind of going mm-hmm. back to no period, mm-hmm. has a level of safety to it. Mm-hmm. We are not going to have to be pushed or challenged or kind of sit in a new experience if we just say no. But I think to allow yourself room and the freedom mm-hmm. to change and adapt and to be considerate of like, oh, maybe I don't need to be that rigid in that moment.
Yeah. Or what, maybe growth,
yes.
right? Maybe the growth would be me being a little more flexible, mm-hmm. me sitting in this discomfort. I think all the time about when I was first getting sober, mm-hmm. Right? Like when you're first getting sober, you kind of do need these rigid boundaries.
Yes.
You can never be around alcohol.
Right.
You have to really limit your life. And I remember I had been sober for a year and you know, when you're first sober, a lot of times they're like, don't get into a relationship, mm-hmm. never go to a bar.
Yep.
Maybe it's not even safe for you to go to a wedding. Like you got to right. really have these rigid boundaries. And then after you've had some time, mm-hmm. the goal is to actually put yourself in situations where you'll be a little bit triggered.
Yes.
So that you can grow, because yes. we know that life isn't going to stop for us. Life mm-hmm. is filled with alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. You will eventually have to probably go to a wedding or an event mm-hmm. where with someone alcohol. Will drink. You will yes. accidentally turn on the TV and there will be a Corona commercial. Like
yes.
it will happen. Mm-hmm. And yes, it can be helpful maybe during early recovery or if you're really fragile, if mm-hmm. you are going through trauma, if yes. there's something going on where you need to beef up these boundaries, take mm-hmm. care of yourself, mm-hmm. no problem.
Yep.
And sometimes I think when we're first setting boundaries, we may need more rigid ones because yeah. we don't even understand, right? We can get too confused with the nuance.
Yes.
But eventually we do need to be more flexible. We do need to sit in the discomfort. Mm-hmm. We do need to expose ourselves to different beliefs, ideas, thoughts, triggers if we want to be able to grow.
Oh, I love that so much. And there's so many clients I've been working with lately that we've been having that conversation of they're like, well, like I want to do this, but how do I do it? And I'm like, well, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it. And I know mm-hmm. people are like astounded that they pay me and I go, well, you have to just do it. You know, like that, but you have to build trust with yourself mm-hmm. that you are not going to be immediately bowled over and destroyed by the world mm-hmm. the second something happens that makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That you're willing to withstand that and to be able to practice reading the situation of, you know, if we're using the sobriety context to say, is this actually an unsafe moment for me?
Right.
Or can I be okay sitting with two or three friends at a table that I trust and I know the alcohol is not just going to dive into my mouth?
That is so true. Because yes. literally when I first got sober, I was terrified to yes. go into a bar because yeah. I was convinced
yeah.
if something would happen. And yeah. that was like a healthy fear at the mm-hmm. beginning, right?
Yes.
But eventually, yeah, like the self-trust you get of mm-hmm. being able to know you can walk into a bar or a situation
yeah.
and you will – you do have choice. You do yeah. have agency over yeah. whether you drink or not. Mm-hmm. It really is such a recipe for building confidence. And I think this is, you know, a whole nother episode that we should get into.
Yes.
But when we overly rely on these boundaries, when we are overly rigid, when we don't embrace flexibility and nuance, we don't have the opportunity to grow, and we don't have – then we don't develop the skills to trust ourselves, because it's kind of like these boundaries are this armor that we wear, and it does protect us and sometimes serve a purpose. But it's same as like a vulnerability conversation, right? Is – armor protects us, but it also keeps us from connecting with people. Because if our boundaries are, no, I will never do this, we are going to struggle to have those deep, meaningful, intimate connections with people in our lives.
No, kind of like wrapping up with that, I think you also have to, in addition to like everything that you said and everything that we've also said, there is so much power that comes from being able to actually articulate why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because that allows the door for that armor to like come off. That allows you the chance to step through that door of like shedding the armor and taking it off and learning how to be vulnerable with the people around you who love you and care about you and have proven their trust in other ways, right? To be able to open up and like, I love Trixie Mattel, drag queen, and her friends on her podcast, because she's taking 3 months off, said that they always laugh because when she invites them over, it's literally for like from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. like at 8 p.m., she will be like, well, this was great. Thanks so much, right? And they were laughing about like the rigidity of the boundary, but they also understand she has a very fast social battery. And she's explained that to them and said, oh, like I just run out really quick. And when I'm out, I need people to get out of my house and I need my house back. Right. To be able to have those vulnerable conversations with our friends so that then it just becomes this funny quirk that we have. That they understand and they respect. And they know in those moments, you know, if we use this example, if they go over to your house and at 8:05, you're like, all right, guys, have a great night. They're not sitting there thinking, oh, did I piss them off? Like what I did, I don't think I did anything wrong. Like, well, why are they kicking me out? Right. It is okay to practice articulating why you're doing what you're doing and allowing people the chance to respect that back.
So our homework, our challenge for you is to notice where you may have some rigidity in your boundaries that aren't serving you anymore. Practice flexibility. Practice, I think that's a great idea, Sam, of articulating, even if you started maybe with writing it down for yourself, why do you actually need this boundary? And share it with someone and see if it can create connection instead of just saying no. Anything that you want to add, Sam?
No. Just rewind. If you want to hear any of my other thoughts on this, go back. Go give it a listen. That's all.
Thank you guys so much for being here.
Yeah.
We love doing this podcast. If you would rate, review, share,
subscribe,
we can get the word out. We'd love that.
It would mean the world to us. You're the best.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.